Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Hey, welcome to the Toronto Today podcast. My name is Greg Brady, host of Toronto Today. You can hear us on the radio at 640 Toronto and stream it through your smart speaker. Weekday mornings, 5:30 to 9, live on 640 Toronto. So this podcast puts together the best highlights of the day's show. And today, we focus in on the Ontario government. And we have been waiting for a while for them to crack down on cell phones specifically, but also the issue of vaping in schools. But first, let's start with Think Tank. We'll dive into the day's top stories with panelist Anne-Marie Akins, a crisis communications advisor, and newspaper columnist, former Toronto mayoral candidate, Anthony Fury. Let's get to this on the cell phone front. The issue is empowering teachers. The issue is balancing what parents and kids are demanding and what's best for them. Here's some of the education minister from yesterday's news conference.
At its core, this is an educational overhaul for the student, the teacher, and even the parent.
Okay. We've got a bit of a phenomenon here, Anne-Marie, and it's a mental health crisis amongst our youth, I think, relative to previous years. We could argue about kids being isolated with virtual learning, school closures, but we'd all agree our kids' development has to come first and foremost. But as you know, there's some question as to whether is this just the same policy as 5 years ago, and what will give teachers and educators teeth to say, oh, you're using the phone in the class? Not anymore. Because I think they'd all agree they haven't felt empowered and emboldened to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's what we're looking at is a really complex problem that is, part of a bigger issue, as you stated, about mental health and about how we have almost encouraged and set kids up to be really connected to their phones, just like they're adults, like just like the parents are. So I that was encouraged during the pandemic because we were all so isolated. But what it is, it's one of those larger systemic kind of problems that we have. And we look at a populist, simplistic answer by implementing a really difficult to police ban. And bans really don't work. They really don't work to address issues that are this big in nature. And I completely agree with your previous speaker that you had that about, you know, our kids, the classrooms are packed, the kids are distracted, they're anxious. And of course, just like adults, you know, you reach for your phone. So this is going to be ineffective and it's just going to set up yet another problem.
So let me follow there. Are you skeptical it can work in practicality? And then if it can't, what do we do?
I just don't think it's going to work. It can't work. Bans don't work because it then just focuses the problem on policing. And the teachers don't have time to do their work now, let alone to, and now I have to police it and I have to, let's focus that the problem is the phone, when the problem really isn't the phone. The problem is the larger issues that kids are dealing with. And if we focus on a simplistic answer, a solution, then all we're going to do is chase that simplistic answer.
It does. I think Anne-Marie makes a strong point, Anthony, in that it's going to take some work to sort of claw things back. And it may never be like it was when we went to school, where it was fairly obvious. No ball caps, no transistor radios. No, you couldn't. I can't pull out a Sports Illustrated and start reading, especially the swimsuit issue. I can't pull that out and start reading it in the middle of a history lecture in high school. I know that. I know what's going to happen to me, but I just don't know. We'll never get back there, but maybe we can find some middle ground on what's acceptable and what's not in each individual classroom.
I think one of the biggest problems right now, Greg, is that kids are in a consequence-free school environment. It's a problem. It has to change. I fully support this policy, and I fully support empowering teachers so that they can bring in consequences and they will be backed up by their board, by their principal, by their superintendent. The phones are a problem. You bring that out one more time, Johnny. It's in my desk. You're not getting it back until end of day. That used to happen to us all the time, Greg, when we were kids. We need to bring that back. Now, in the minister's remarks he played, it was very interesting that he talked about it change and referenced for parents as well. And I think part of the problem is my generation of parents, they are not backing teachers up. I hear so many stories from friends who are teachers I encounter who, you know, it used to be, Greg, if my parents found out that I had got a poor mark on a test or that I had to stay back after class or during lunch, they would say to me, and what did you do to deserve that? We got to have a talk with you, son. Now what happens? I'm shocked to learn this, but I hear it more and more, is that the parents say, I can't believe the teacher did that to you. I'm going to have a word with that teacher. They're clearly getting something wrong here. That is unacceptable. And I think part of the problem is that if you do confiscate a kid's cell phone, the parents might end up complaining. And that's not acceptable at all either.
Well, I think that's it. And we're running. I worry, Anthony, and I'll come back to Anne-Marie on this. I worry we're running schools like it's a car dealership and the customer is always right. No, they're not. And I get it. Teachers saying there's no infrastructure. We need to be able to lock these phones up. We need to obviously we got to free ourselves from some of these liability issues. But not having infrastructure, Anthony, is no reason not to deal with it. If a student brought a knife out of their pocket and started twirling it around in the air, you'd take it if you're a teacher. And if you don't, let's find a teacher that will. So I don't want to link the knife with the phone, but it kind of is the same principle. Take out something that's banned and I'm going to take it from you so I can continue my lesson. I have to do that.
And I don't think that's an extreme example, the knife, Greg, because one of the things we hear more and more from teachers and unions have spoken out about this is the level of violence at schools against teachers is really going through the roof, and it's absolutely unacceptable. And I think it all feeds into the consequences-free zone we are in. So I think this is a great policy, and let's see aggressive enforcement of it.
And Emery, I think, again, the infrastructure does matter. They've been telling me this all weekend. They need a means to securely lock up phones. They've asked for years. Give us that means so we can store safely confiscated phones. They don't have it right now. So we got to all fight an angle and advocate for teachers to have that sort of setup. And right now they're telling us they don't even have desks that lock anymore, which is incredible to me because every teacher we had a locking desk.
Or they have shared desks, so
right.
Desks with other teachers. But I think one of the things is that we have to be careful as adults that we don't do, because our parents did it, is to romanticize what it was like when we were in school. Because that's what we do. We romanticize what it was like when we were in school. You know, my parents told me how many miles they walked to school. You know, things change. You can't keep comparing things to the past. And we can't keep generalizing and saying, oh, schools are all this way. It's all, you know, the parents will defend their kids and blah, blah. You know, let's stop with the generalizations and romanticizing our youth. And, you know, pay attention to the, you know, something we didn't have when we were kids. We didn't have lockdowns either.
No.
So things are different today.
Yeah.
But Emery, things have changed. I mean, the culture has shifted. I take your point, but I don't think there's any denying, you know, the consequence-free thing.
Oh, I can't assume that because, you know, I have my youngest child just been, you know, they've just gone through the school system. And I don't remember that at all. When he got in trouble, he got in trouble.
I feel like the strap. We'll save the strap for another segment. I never got it, but the guy brought it out. The principal brought it. I was like in 7 years old. He brought it out right in front of me, and he goes, "This is what it'd be like." And he hit the desk as hard as he could, about 5 inches away from my hand. And I'm like, "I'll be good from now on." So we're probably not headed in that direction. I will admit that.
I hope not.
It straightened me out. I'm not sure I stayed on the straight and narrow from age 7 till now, but I did my best. All right, another education issue I do want to get to, and this is concerning, but it has those layers of the political world that we certainly live in right now. It looks like the Halton District School Board has told a guidance counselor, you're staying home until we figure out what to do about this. This video is from an incident, and the audio of it is from an incident on Friday that showed a guidance counselor using language towards a student. She basically said, you wearing a keffiyeh, that reminds me of a terrorist, and this exchange followed from here.
So I'm not a terrorist and you don't treat me like a terrorist, but I look like one.
That reminds me of.
Oh, so I don't usually look like one, but when I put this on.
That reminds me of.
Oh, okay.
I'll get a keep
alright, perfect.
It does remind
me. Okay, I just want to talk to the rest of the school, because, like, me personally, I feel offended.
Anne-Marie, not great. Not great at all for this particular guidance counselor. The principal at that school has condemned the incident in a statement posted online, noting the staff member's been sent home. And it's concerning. There's a lot of this in our schools right now. There may be kids that are coming down to the offices and saying, hey, I'm Jewish and I'm scared because of things that are happening. We all knew past October 7th that schools were going to be a bit of an elevated zone for negative energy. And here's another example.
Yeah, I think it would be lovely to hear the whole exchange because, you know, context is often everything. But I think this focuses on another ban that's not working. And that's the legislature has banned it. And that's now they're in this kind of stalemate that's going to continue. And, the answers aren't simple for this situation. But she obviously didn't use great judgment wading into that at all. It was unnecessary for her to make any comment whatsoever. I just can't wait for this conflict to be over because we'll start to see it, you know, things go back to a little more simple times. But right now, it's the policing, again, of this issue is going to continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it makes me fearful for both our Jewish community and for our young people, for our Palestinian communities. It's going to be a very rough go.
Tricky territory, Anthony. I know I can understand a parent saying, I don't want that educator back in the school. I also don't know if she just gets bounced to another school and it becomes somebody else's issue. But I also don't know where we leave ourselves with teachable moments to evolve about language. It's a very difficult one for me. I wouldn't want her at my kid's school today, tomorrow, or the next day. But where it goes from there, I'm not sure.
One of the things that saw police morale drop a lot in Toronto, Greg, is whenever an out-of-context video would get posted online, politicians and leadership at the city would rush to throw the police under the bus without having a full picture. And during my campaign, I said, I will not do that until you have all the facts. I will not likewise throw this teacher under the bus right now when you both acknowledge that we don't have a full picture of what's going on. We just discussed how there's a lot of chaos going on in the schools right now. So, you know, what's also going on here is the student who said, I'm going to film this teacher and post it on Instagram or whatnot. Has that student faced repercussions? Because that's pretty destabilizing for the class environment as well. So I want to see the fuller picture here.
But that's fair. And she should get that in any kind of tribunal from the school. But I think we're allowed an instant snap reaction. And if I watched her say, the keffiyeh reminds me of a terrorist. She said yes to the student after he said, does it remind you of Hamas? She said yes to that.
Correct. She's not giving a press conference. She's not like running for office with a statement that she spent hours writing here. So you're right that we could really nitpick the particular word and phrase of this sentence, but I'm not going to do that right here. Was it a perfect phrase she made? No, but you know, I'd like to know what the kids were doing as well in the broader picture.
And that's fair, but isn't the principal doing the right thing by sending her home until he figures it out?
I don't know, because I think they could probably do a broader review. I imagine all the people involved in this situation, they know a lot more than we do already. So these sort of month-long reviews that are really just about making things blow over, I'm not a fan of those either. I find them cop out.
Well, I'm not, and we don't. I don't know that we always do the best job. We'll take a story, and then it's difficult because you got to keep calling the board because they don't exactly publicize punishment or a move or a transfer of a teacher that did something wrong. A lot of these stories get a lot of instantaneous reaction. You're right about that, and then it's really difficult to follow up and find out, well, what happened in that case. Because it could set a guide, right, Anne-Marie? It could set a guideline as to where you're going to go the rest of the time. And it's a great moment for other teachers to go, well, that was on the wrong. I was on the wrong side of things with that one.
Yeah, it's difficult. There's two difficult parts of it. One is, I think the school board did, if you want to look from a reputation perspective, they reacted quickly, publicly, took accountability for it and so forth. But always the piece missing, And usually it's because of privacy, is the accountability at the end to say, this is what we did. We investigated. This is what we found. Yeah. And we're going to take, you know, this kind of ownership with it. Because we're dealing with people's personal lives, this teacher's, for example, or there's students involved, you do have to, they have rights of privacy that you have to respect. So it is difficult, but the accountability at the end part is usually the piece that's missing when it comes to reputation management and so forth. But I think they did the right thing by reacting quickly for all the right reasons. This teacher deserves a full airing of what it is that happened. And if this is a moment in time she can learn from, that we can all learn from, that's a good thing then. There's nothing wrong with that. They aren't saying at this point she's going to be fired, yeah. She's going to be this. I think it's just something we all need to learn from.
All right, let's go to the transit world. And Anne-Marie, that's your previous world. Curious to see how you think this will land. Toronto transit workers voted overwhelmingly in support of a strike mandate. It was about 98%. We have not seen a transit strike in the city in a long, long time. It would go back to late May of 2006 when there was kind of a sudden one-day strike that leaves a lot of people with no TTC. We saw even five stations go down Thursday, and it affected everybody all through Friday and Saturday. So when I bring that up, it's pretty important, pretty incumbent upon the TTC to make sure there's labor peace at the end of the day, but also strike a responsible deal because it's a publicly funded service. And if we're paying for big raises, eventually that's either going to mean they need more ridership or they need more money from the rest of us.
Oh, this gives me nightmares because as a public servant, and I have been after, 12 years in the transit world as a public servant, I was also one at the city where the public health and the public library, and every system I was involved with had a strike at some point that delivered chaos to the city. Even the library, shutting down our libraries, and it was only a week, but it was chaos. And shutting down the TTC is, in spite of the fact that we think, well, we all can just work at home. 50% of people don't work and never did work at home all throughout the pandemic. They have to get to work somehow. And as if it's not difficult to get around this city as it is, can you imagine with no TTC? And the work, I will tell you this, though, the work that's going behind the scenes right now, they are already exhausted because they have to develop contingency plans in the event. If it does come to a strike, you also have to have a huge communication strategy if there is a strike. And then there's the negotiation that's underway to really get hopeful that they can come to an agreement. And I really hope they do.
Anthony, you around this time last year, you're campaigning, you're running for mayor. You had a lot of opinions about the TTC, its effectiveness, and what needs to be done here. And I make the point, they have a $2.6 billion budget for this year, but they didn't increase fares. With a lot of these unions striking new deals, 5% increase, 6% increase, unless they get a lot more ridership, it's hard to figure out how people don't pay more next year at this time.
Greg, anytime I go on the subway now, I think, is my eyesight getting worse? Because I look up at that little ticker telling me when the next train's coming. And I go, well, that can't be a 9 because I've been riding the subway since I was a little kid. And it's never been 9 minutes.
When was the last time you got your vision checked? That is a very fair question. You should have revealed that during your campaign.
And I'm just surprised by how bad it is every time I go on. Like, I don't use it every day. And every time I go on, there's one of these things that people tell me about you have to get off the train. This one's canceled. The Bloor line gets shut down. They bring in the shuttle buses. It's becoming less and less reliable. And a strike will only hurt the cause for everybody. If a strike had happened during a mayor's race, I would have campaigned on making it an essential service. And people would have responded quite positively. Either it's essential or it's not. But at the same time, I'm pretty sympathetic to the fact that it's becoming a more rough and tumble place in terms of a lot of abuse that TTC employees are on the receiving end of. And the affordability crisis is very real. So I appreciate why transit workers want as much money as they can, because they're dealing with crazy inflation as well.
It's tough, Anne-Marie. It's a unionized job. It's a good job. I've known TCC drivers. I've known my next door neighbor drove a bus for years before he retired. And some of the stories he'd tell me, even 10, 12 years ago, I'm like, you deserve every penny you can get. But it's striking that balance, isn't it, with the city and what the workers want.
It is finding that balance. And, part of strike, announcing, we're going on a strike, but not actually implementing a strike. So they just announced, they voted. Some of that is a part of a negotiation dance that is underway. And every time I've been there, so many times I've been there, it resolved. But you never knew until the last minute. So that back room work continues in just to prepare for this city, because the city will be, I think I remember the last time we were at near a state of emergency with the transit system shut down.
Oh, my goodness. We got a few minutes here. I want to address even yesterday in the city. It was very difficult to get around. We've all referenced the west end of the city having a lot of subway problems from Thursday on, from Kipling to Islington. Rain never helps, but we've got construction on the Gardner that works through the weekend now. And yesterday was a Khalsa Day parade. And this has grown now to be, I can't believe this figure, the city's third largest parade. So, Anthony, I'll start with you. It is important. It's part of our cultural mosaic to have parades, to have gatherings. But they shut down Lakeshore on a day when the Blue Jays are playing. People are coming into the city. The Gardner's already an absolute mess. I don't know the line here. I don't know the line here between allow, and there's going to be all sorts of charity bike rides starting where we close the DVP and we close the Gardner and we close Main Streets. Then there's Pride. It's tricky, right? How do we balance respecting these important weekends and gatherings with getting from point A to B on the weekend for the rest of us?
We reduce them. We reduce the number of times that we allow this by a significant amount. There have been conversations in the past about making these events amalgamate so they happen at the same time. We make people get up even earlier in terms of when these charity rides start and so on, because to your point, it's just shutting down the city. And of course, we all wish these organizations and charities well, and it's great they put on these successful events, but people have to get around, and we're at the point now where Toronto's status as a city where people have a future is being threatened by all of these things combined. The worsening traffic is a major disincentive to investing here, living here, working here. So we got to do all hands on deck, and that includes reducing these things.
And Marie, I know even the late Rob Ford back in 2010 said he wanted to get marathons off Toronto streets and just have people run 26 miles in parks. I don't know how we're going to pull that off. But the point being, this has been an argument for a long time that that we've got enough congestion. We've got a ton of construction. We just talked about the transit not being reliable. I had a friend of mine take 30 minutes to go 4 kilometers in the downtown yesterday. So this is no good.
Yeah, I'm going to completely agree with you guys with this. But the reason why is we are at a really unusual point in time with the city. We've never seen progress happening like we have now. This is a progress long in the waiting, whether it's a construction of major transit projects. We have so many going on in the city now, exactly what we asked for, and we're getting it. So that's a great thing. We also have a backlog of major road construction like the Gardner, and we have we're building housing like we've never built housing before. So the city is in a bit of a state of chaos right now because of progress. So that we have to think about it. And I think the city's afraid to say no to these charities. But I think the charities should be saying out loud, we're not going to do this to the city right now. We're going to rethink it. We're going to run our fundraising in a different way.
Yeah, let's work together on this, the charities in the city. I think I got 20 seconds. I got to go really quick here. What do you want to finish on?
No, I just said I agree that the charities, I think, should have a conversation with the city. Anne-Marie makes an excellent point that we can have this conversation behind closed doors, and then they can come forward with a productive solution.
Yeah, we may not be able to run it exactly the way we did it in 2007.
Yeah. I'll donate to them if they do that.
That sounds like blackmail. thanks to you both for the time this morning. Appreciate it.
Okay.
That was Think Tank, which airs every weekday at 7:35. We run it right up to the 8 o'clock news with Dave Bradley. Our next guest, Stephen Lecce, Ontario's education minister, and the province introducing new limits that are meant to empower and embolden teachers and educators to limit cell phone use for kids in classrooms. Different policy at the elementary level than the high school level. We'll also talk about banning vaping devices in a move to reduce distractions in classrooms and improve the overall health of kids.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Absolutely. I mean, when we've seen restrictions and community buy-in, particularly of parents, you can point to jurisdictions that have done it right. In 2019, we asked school boards to do this. Some brought forth strong policies, but most did not. And you need to have the political courage to confront this problem once and for all. This patchwork did not work in Ontario. And you look at Quebec and other jurisdictions, there are lessons learned. We need standards, we need enforcement, and we need to be indiscriminately applying it everywhere. And that's why you brought forth a more ambitious plan, with the default being cell phones are out of sight, out of mind, and obviously social media is off all school Wi-Fi devices. And finally, vapes and cannabis products are not to be used on school property. We're going to have to send a message of zero tolerance, particularly on vaping cannabis, because it's gone out of hand in our country. We have the highest vape rates in the world. So this policy is designed to be strong, and more importantly, to build confidence of parents that if we work together, we can, as you pointed out, to those jurisdictions, we can improve the outcomes and the health of kids.
I know you're going to run into parents and you're going to hear from them saying, I want to be regularly in touch with my kid. And to them, I even said this on Friday, we're going to have to wean them off that communication line the same way we're going to have to wean kids off, are we not?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is reconditioning all of us and how we communicate and our behaviors as adults and even as children. But, you know, the reason why I spoke so much to parents yesterday, they were my primary audience. We need their buy-in. And we believe that most parents, frankly, support the cause and they want to see reform. They want to see us actually crack down on the distractions. So I want to believe they're going to be with us on this. There'll be some adjustments to the timing. Look, my policy, the policy of Ontario's government is for our youngest kids, they're not going to have access to their cell phones through the day for kindergarten to grade six. These are the very youngest kids. If they even happen to have a cell phone, then that will be the policy. But of course, if a parent has a reason to get a hold of their child, they still will be able to, for example, lunch. It just requires the teacher's consent. There's a time and place. But during instructional time, that will not be permitted. For the kids in grade seven and up, those are the middle school kids and high school, that's where we're saying, look, you could have it on your person. You're a young adult. We want to try to teach personal responsibility and the responsibilities of technology. You could have it on you. You just can't have it on the desk, and it's got to sort of be, as we say, out of sight, out of mind. So in your backpack, in your purse, just not available and distracting the child or the school. When a teacher thinks there's a need for technology, they will allow it, and I will respect their judgment. But I want families to know that we will back the teachers and the principals and the school boards when they enforce the policy. At the core, Greg, this is about education and prevention, but we're going to back the staff when they bring it forth.
Are you any element of being disappointed that school boards weren't more proactive on this? They could have established their own policies and kind of didn't.
I mean, this is what's, I think, ironic. You know, like, for example, TDSB, they're launching this big lawsuit against the largest social media companies on earth. And yet they had the power literally today to take every step I announced yesterday, with the exception of the mandatory learning on curriculum. Only I as minister can do that, the province. Otherwise, they could have banned social media from Wi-Fi and devices. They could have restricted cell phones. They could have brought forth vape detectors and a zero tolerance message on cannabis and vaping. But they haven't, and most boards have not, and thus here we're at. And so the province and the premier said, look, we've got to do better. You know, we are number one in the worst benchmarks when it comes to high vaping rates. We still don't have the majority of kids meeting provincial math standards. When we say back to basics, it means focusing kids on academic rigor, on safety, and frankly, the reintroduction of common sense in our school system. So I think parents stand with us on this. And I know public health leaders and pediatricians and so many experts have said, look, if we don't fix this, this is of generational importance, a societal importance. So we're doing what we can. We're stepping up with a bold plan. And we've announced funding too, Greg, for mental health and addictions, because it's hard to, you know, you can't decouple the conversation. Some of these kids have addiction issues, be it on technology or vaping. And I want families to know we're expanding the access to community-based addiction services for those very kids.
A couple minutes left. Stephen Lecce joining us, Education Minister for the Province of Ontario and Toronto today. Teachers telling me yesterday they do need the infrastructure help. Some of them don't even have a desk to lock phones up anymore. And I think we'd agree. if things get topsy weird on a given day, they can't be juggling $500-$700 phones. There's liability issues there. How can you help teachers securely lock up these phones until it's time for the kids to collect them? Might have lost Stephen there. Sorry, we lost you briefly there. Did you get the question?
I did. Yeah. I was just saying, you know, part of this is the policy is going to say to students, if they are unable to put their phone away, and they've been asked one time, two times, three times to put their phones away, the policy will say now the child has to bring their phone, turn it off, bring it to the front desk. It'll sit there at the end of the instructional time, like the end of that class, that period, the child would pick up their phone again. So it's a fairly easy system designed based on jurisdictions have done this right. Keep in mind, today we're sending a letter home to parents. It's going to outline some of those steps and those expectations as we lead into September. We're also calling on, we're funding School Mental Health Ontario to create essentially training sessions for parents on how to have those conversations, how to change the culture in the home. That's where this is going to start. And the, obviously, you know, the announcement yesterday was about building upon those conversations and frankly saying to families and to kids that we're going to have to be fairly, we're going to have to reimagine how schools and learning takes place and try to really create some standardization and rigor back in our schools. So, you know, look, don't get me wrong, Greg, it's going to be challenging. Yeah. It's going to be tough on the kids and maybe even some of the families. I get that. But this is a change that will improve their mental health and their academic success. And I think any responsible government would bring forth an ambitious plan here. And that's what the premier, that's what the government has done.
Before you go, important to ask you about this. There was a video circulating yesterday from something that happened at Iroquois Ridge High School. The Halton District School Board's aware of it. It's an exchange between a guidance counselor and a student about wearing a keffiyeh. In essence, do you trust the school boards to handle these situations? And are you aware of the video?
Yeah, I mean, look, we expect education staff to model behavior. They've got to create a learning environment where everyone belongs. And so, you know, I've seen part of the video, and I think it's just deeply offensive. It's obviously unacceptable, and to the credit of the board there, they did take swift action on the matter. But it's a reminder that we have to lead by example, and words matter in our schools.
Thanks to Minister Lecce for joining us. Now, Muna Kadri, president of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation District 16, for some reaction to these policy changes and where we go to get it all ready before the day after Labor Day this coming September.
Absolutely. How good does it feel for the fact that we all are on the same page? I think parents are crying out for more. I think education workers are crying out for more. And, you know, for all the times we say that the minister has missed the mark, he has landed on the mark to identify that we do have an issue. It's a question of, you know, we need to get together and figure out how to solve this David versus Goliath problem of tech companies sort of weeding their way into our classrooms.
Now, there will be parents listening that don't necessarily agree with you or me or the minister. I got to keep in touch with my kid at all times. I need to let them know where they need to be after school. I got to remind them of a dentist appointment 2 weeks from Wednesday. There are those parents out there. And I hate to say we got to leave them by the side of the road. We got to wean them off their connection to the kids the same way we got to wean the kids off, don't we?
Well, it's a few issues. Really, we need to get to a place where parents feel that they can send their kids to school and they don't need that constant connection in terms of their students while they're in class. And so what can we do in our school buildings to make our parents feel like they don't need that? Because there's still lunch where students can get on their cell phones and connect with their parents. We just need every period, 75 minutes, total focus in the classroom on what's happening.
When did you start, Muna, to see this start to go in the wrong direction here, that it's far too much of a distraction? The phones, even if I'm talking to somebody 15, 18 years younger than me, maybe they were taking a flip phone to school and they could call someone and text someone. It wasn't like having a mini computer in their pocket, was it?
Do you remember when we had pagers and the pagers beeping in class would be a bit of a distraction? Come on, you know, that was our time. I would say when I was teaching in the classroom 15 years ago, when I first started teaching, they were a distraction at the time. And you could sort of see the addiction forming. And so this is not a new issue. It's something we've been facing for years, but we've been coming up with the same old solutions. And, you know, modern problems require modern solutions.
So I lay out some of that practicality. No locks for desks. Teachers are worried that if a student's phone gets damaged or, heaven forbid, goes missing, they'd be liable or the school would be liable. How do we sort of check the boxes of these? Again, there's a lot that can get sorted in the next 5 months. How do we sort out some of these practical issues that they genuinely have, these educators?
So these practical issues are band-aids. And so what the root cause of the situation is, and we called it 5 years ago when Lisa Thompson, then Minister of Education, said, you put more kids in classrooms, they'll be more resilient. Our classrooms are super crowded. So you've got one teacher at the front or circulating with 35 kids. That's why kids are sort of getting drowned in their cell phones. And so what we need to do is address the root cause. We need to lower the number of kids in each classroom so teachers aren't losing 5 kids in the back, 10 kids in the back because they're lost in their cell phones and the teacher is juggling 30, 35 kids. And so it's not about locking them up. That's your band-aid solution. It's about creating a climate where kids don't feel like they need to get lost in their cell phones.
What about the teacher's own use of a phone? I don't want that to be policed too tightly, and it's tricky because it's very much, to pardon the phrase, monkey see, monkey do. And we know this even in our own households. Well, if we're using our phones at the dinner table, if our kid's telling us something important and our nose is in our phone, we'll snap to it and be like, I got to be better in this moment. There's a responsibility here for teachers too. I think they're willing to embrace it, right?
Absolutely. But you have to remember, like in my board at the York Region District School Board, teachers need their cell phones to log in to do attendance. Not because that's the device they do it on. We have multi-factor authentication. So they get a code that allows them to log in, texted to them. And so when you look at teachers in classrooms and the way they use their cell phones, it's a necessity because school boards have sort of integrated them into their login systems.
You noted and you quoted the education minister who said, I'll have the backs of teachers who enforce this policy. And you wrote, and I think teachers, again, appreciate this, I'm going to be cashing that check.
If you see him on a bunch of emails,
right, so
I'll tell you.
What's your worst fear about teachers coming back and saying, you told me to confiscate, you told me to be tough, and now I don't have the backs. Now parents are all over me and even the administration's all over me because we do have unhappy parents now. What happens then?
I've lived it. I'll tell you, I had a teacher, a great technology teacher just last year who actually built a lockable box to put cell phones in so students wouldn't be distracted in class because we already have this policy in place. And he's, you know, a great contractor teaching woodworking. He's like, I can build this. And he did. But then the liability issue came up and parents said, well, that's a $1,500 iPhone. If something happens to it while you're teaching or doing this, you're liable for it. And then, you know, the world came crashing down on the teacher. And so who is going to support my colleagues in these situations? And if it's going to be the minister, I'm going to show up and ask for that support.
What are next steps for teachers, people like yourself, I'd say board members, board trustees, union reps, to meet with the minister and make sure that whatever else gets disagreed upon, that everybody's uniform and strong going into the fall on this policy?
Well, here's the truth. Nothing's changed. This is the exact same policy that we have on the books in my school board. So what we need to understand from the minister is what's changed about this policy that's going to get cell phones out of classrooms, and what's he going to do to address the teacher shortage so that we have more supervision and more people to go around to make sure kids are engaged.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of today's show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can hear the entire show on the radio 5:30 to 9, weekdays on 640 Toronto. Stream us at 640toronto.com or ask your smart speaker to play 640 Toronto and Toronto Today. Have yourselves a great day.